This is a time of year when much of the Western world celebrates the birth of the Christ. I'd like to start out with a different story this evening, though, and that's my spiritual teacher and guru, Mother Hamilton, who's pictured up here on the altar. And then she was born on Christmas Day, 1904. She met her spiritual teacher, Paramahansa Yogananda, in 1925 in Seattle, Washington. He was speaking there at the Masonic Hall, and she was asked to go by a co-worker. She didn't have too much interest. She didn't have never heard of yoga before or Hinduism or knew anything of that. But Paramahansa Yogananda was coming to town, and this co-worker insisted so much, she said, if I ask my wife permission to take you, will you come with me? She thought, well, if it means that much to him, I guess I'll go. They were the two last seated in the Masonic Hall, which held over 3,000 people, and she thought, my, who is this who attracts so many people? Must be very important. He came out on the stage dressed in ochre. I understand that he used to play Song of India before he'd come out on the stage. And he spoke there for several hours, and she just felt transported, absolutely uplifted. She had been raised Catholic, but had left that church earlier in her life, much to the consternation of her parents. And for the first time, somebody spoke about God being right inside of her, instead of some outside personality that was handing out judgments and lightning bolts. Because of that consciousness and the power that he spoke with, it uplifted her in her own spirit. Afterwards, he offered to shake hands with anybody and greet anybody afterwards. So she stood in line, and as she got closer and closer, her heart started beating harder and harder, until she thought it would just fall right out of her chest onto the floor. She came up to him at last and shook his hand, looked into his eyes, and she felt an electric shock go from the top of her head to the bottom of her feet. And she would always say at that moment, from that moment to this, I was his. She felt just absolutely dedicated towards this great God-man and dedicated her own life towards her own God-realization. Master left the body in 1952, and soon thereafter, the organization made many changes in his works and even the spirit of his work. Because of that, she was trying to preserve the originality of his teachings, and through that struggle became somewhat of a black sheep within the spiritual family. Frustrated at not being able to prevent those changes, she met in 1954 Swami Ramdas, lovingly known as Papa, who was touring here from India in the West, and just felt the tremendous God force within him. So she decided to go and see if he could help her in saving her own teacher's work. And also, she had attained a high state of realization at that point. She had attained Nirvikalpa Samadhi, but knew that there was more for her to go through. So she went, she and her husband sold everything they had at a time when many people were looking at retirement. They were in their mid-50s, and went to India, to an ashram in the south of India called Anandashram, meaning abode of bliss. And there, Swami Ramdas greeted them and really began to have a tremendous influence on her life. One day, he was looking at her and looking right over the top of her head, and he let out this long sigh. And suddenly, she was put into this experience, this tremendous Kundalini experience. Well, on going there, she had an idea that these scriptures of the Christian world contain deeper truths than what was commonly known. She had the idea that this was the archetype. This was the story, really, of every human being's journey from the human to the divine. Only it was told in parable form. It wasn't obvious. There's a hidden truth underneath the outward exterior. There's a wonderful story about parable and truth. Truth used to wander the world over, and wherever he visited, people took a great disliking to him. They didn't like truth being told where they were at. And so they would abuse truth greatly, and they would beat him up and put him out of their towns. So he wandered all over the world looking for some place where he would be welcome, but never found such a place. One day he found this beautiful, gorgeous being that was colorful and multi-layered and had tremendous depth to it. And this being's name was Parable. And so Truth noticed, that Parable was accepted and loved wherever it went. So he asked for its secret. And so Parable said, "Well, I just have these lovely layers that go all the way in. But you know what? There's some emptiness inside of me. Somehow I'm not complete. I'm not fulfilled in myself. But I sense within you, Truth, that you are that completion to me." And so Parable and Truth joined forces. And in the center of Parable was Truth. And in the exterior of Parable were all these lovely curtains, these lovely colors, these lovely fabrics that welcomed people in. And if they were interested enough, they could get down to the center where they found Truth. So Mother had this idea that within these pages was a tremendous truth, but there is all these exterior images and fabrics and textures that didn't allow the mind easily to penetrate in to find the truth. You really had to be a voyager. You had to be someone who is intent upon knowing the truth behind these many layers. So as she was in this ashram in the south of India, Swami Ramdas put her into the spiritual experience. Through these experiences, she came to know the truth that was underlying many of these stories. She found that this story of Jesus, the Christed One, the Anointed One, was actually the story of every human being in their journey from the human to the divine. Most people focus on the outward parable form, the historical aspect of this truth, but they don't get through the many layers and find out that fundamental, that archetypal truth that explains what every person's own journey is. So she had these terrific revelations that began to explain to her what the truth was within these pages. So I'd like to read to you from St. Matthew, around the birth of the Christ. We celebrate it this time of year, but actually historians believe that probably the real birth happened in March or so, based on the shepherds being out watching their flocks and when that would happen in the time of year. But as happens with many of these things, the Christian traditions got combined in with many of the indigenous traditions, and it got combined with the winter solstice. And so we celebrate the winter solstice about the same time that we celebrate this birth. Now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. When as his mother Mary was espoused to Joseph, before they came together, she was found with child of the Holy Ghost. Then Joseph, her husband, being a just man, not willing to make her a public example, was minded to put her away privily. But while he thought on these things, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared unto him in a dream, saying, "Joseph, thou son of David, fear not to take thee Mary thy wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Ghost. And she shall bring forth a son, and thou shalt call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins. Now all this was done, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the Lord by prophets, saying, Behold, a virgin shall be with child, and shall bring forth a son, and they shall call his name Emmanuel, which being interpreted is God with us. Then Joseph, being raised from sleep, did as the angel of the Lord had bidden him, and took him unto his wife. And he knew her not till she had brought forth her firstborn son, and he called his name Jesus. Now when Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, there came wise men from the east to Jerusalem, saying, Where is he that is born king of the Jews? For we have seen his star in the east, and are come to worship him. When Herod the king was heard these things, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And he gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together. He demanded of them where Christ should be born. And they said unto him, In Bethlehem of Judea. For thus was written by the prophet, And thou, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, art not the least among the princes of Judah. For out of thee shall come a governor that shall rule my people Israel. Then Herod, when he had privily called the wise men, inquired of them diligently what time the star appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem and said, Go and search diligently for the young child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I may come and worship him also. When they had heard the king, they departed. And lo, the star which they saw in the east went before them, till it came and stood over where the young child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced with exceeding great joy. And when they were come into the house, they saw the young child with Mary his mother, and fell down and worshipped him. And when they had opened their treasures, they presented unto him gifts, gold, and frankincense, and myrrh. And being warned of God in a dream, that they should depart into their own country another way. And when they departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, Arise, take the young child and his mother, and flee unto Egypt, and be thou there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night, and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of by the Lord, by the prophet, saying, Out of Egypt I have called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem, and at all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. Then was fulfilled which was spoken of by Jeremy the prophet, saying, In Ramah was there a voice heard, lamentation and weeping and great mourning. Rachel weeping for her children, and would not be comforted, because they were not. But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeareth in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, Arise, and take the young child and his mother, and go unto the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's wife. He arose and took the young child and the mother, and came into the land of Israel. Now this story has been handed down to us as a factual history. But deeply embedded within these words are great truths. What Mother discovered within her own being as she went through these experiences. She would go through certain experiences and then would be taken to the Bible and shown where they were being talked about in parable or allegorical form. One of the great truths in here is the inner truth of Joseph and Mary. Joseph represents the pineal gland and Mary the pituitary gland. And it being a virgin birth, there's secretions that come from the pineal and the pituitary gland. One is milk-like in substance and the other is honey-like in substance. And this is the original meaning between the land of milk and honey. And so this virgin birth happens because these two glands never come together, but rather these secretions come out and they form a seed. And this is called the Christ seed because within it contains the power to transform this body and this consciousness from a human consciousness into a divine consciousness. Now this secreted seed comes down the ganglionic nervous system and is deposited behind the stomach. Now Bethlehem means house of bread, and so this stomach is this house of bread. The wise men are following the star, and the star is seen here at the Ajna Center. Within that center, if you meditate on there with deep concentration, you will see this beautiful gold, and within that is this beautiful deep blue, and within that is this silver star. It's a five-pointed star. And when you see that, that is the doorway, that is the Christ center, or in the East, it's the Krishna center. It is the place of transcending the human consciousness and going into the divine consciousness. So when this star is seen here at the third eye point, then that is a portent of things to come. That means that you have developed yourself enough spiritually in order to begin this process of transformation. Now the wise men surrendered frankincense, frankincense, myrrh, and gold. Gold represents material wealth, things of the world, our attachment to things of the world. And this is the fool's gold, the gold of the world that we all run after here and there in the hopes that it will bring us some form of happiness. But ultimately it is a vain hope because there is only one lasting happiness, and that is soul joy, soul happiness, what we find right within ourselves. So what is surrendered up at this time is all of our attachment to worldly possessions, to worldly things, to all those things that we had believed would bring us happiness in an outer sense. Frankincense represents our sense of worship, our sense of devotion, our desire to know the truth. We surrender that up also when this wise principle is active within us. The third thing that this wisdom nature within us surrenders up is myrrh. Now myrrh is the bitterness of the world. It is the sorrow. It is the lamentation. It's an amazing thing that we can be attached to the negativity in life, to the sorrow in life. When I was a late teenager, my 19 or so, I had been experiencing some depression, some sadness at different losses in my life. I was amazed to notice one time that as I moved into this sadness, this depression, I felt myself slipping into it almost like a comfortable pair of old slippers. It was actually an attractive force that was drawing me into it. Now, once I was into that state, I didn't like it very much, but I was amazed to see that it was actually an active principle that was drawing me into it. So we are also, when we have this sadness or this bitterness or this anger or whatever it is, it's inevitable as we live life that we'll have times when we feel that way. But when it becomes part of our nature, it's us hanging on to it. It's us clinging onto that energy, onto that source. We begin to identify with it, and it serves some purpose in our life. So that needs to be surrendered up also. Sometimes people take on their identity as being this sad person or this angry person or this, you know, whatever that negative energy is. So it's also surrendering that up and letting go of it and releasing it at the feet of divinity, of this Christ self. So these are some of the inner meanings that happen. Now when this seed is deposited in this cave, conical cave-like area behind the stomach, what happens then are the passions, or Herod, rises up. Now Herod represents all the passions, all the outward projected force. And sexual temptation comes up terrifically at that time. Now, when we're on the spiritual pursuit and the spiritual path, and this seed is born and within us, then this is a time that we retain that seed, that we don't go and become sexually active during that time. But this Herod force comes up, and it tries to cut off and kill all the children. In other words, the sexual energy, or that which produces children, is drawn outside of us. So during that time, it's important that we retain that force, because that's the force that will be involved in the transmutation that happens right within our own being, right within our own spine. So this Christ seed is sent to the land of Egypt. Now the land of Egypt is also the land of darkness, and it is at the base of our spine, where this Muladhara, or this base chakra, is. And when this Christ seed goes there, it's stored there until the passions, or Herod, is dead. And then the Christ seed is sent for, or it begins its ascension up the spine. Now, Galilee means the circuit, and the circuit is the spine. There is a mystical center called the Sushumna that runs right up the middle of our spine, and this is an energy flow that goes right in the center of our spine. And it is here that the Kundalini force begins to rise up. Now this Kundalini force is this tremendous life force that is stored at the base of the spine. The same creative force that has gone out and created all this vast universe is also within us. As in the outer, so in the inner. As in the outer universe, so within our own inner universe, within our own body. And so this terrific creative force that can go into creating a new life, which is a true miracle, can also be uplifted and transmuted and becomes the empowerment to transform or create a new life within us. So then this Christ seed, through this Kundalini force, begins to rise up through the interior of the spine. And it comes through each center. As I say, at the base center is the Muladhara, or the base chakra. This is the impulse for sexuality and creativity and the creating new life in the world. Now in the Old Testament, in Genesis, we're told about the fall of Adam and Eve. This also has a symbolic meaning and isn't a literal story. You know, when you look at into the accuracy, the plausibility of some of these stories, you wonder where anybody could take them seriously from. Here's Adam and Eve in the garden, and eventually Cain kills Abel and is sent out of the garden. And he goes and lives in a city. Well, where'd all those people come from if Adam and Eve are the first ones? You know, so you have to look into the underlying layers of these. Adam represents reason, and Eve represents feeling. And they're tempted by the snake that resides in the tree. This tree is the knowledge of good and evil. The serpent is this life force that runs in the spine. Now, if you were to look at this nervous system, from the brain downward, you could say that it looks like a tree with all the afferent and the efferent nerves that run up into the brain and then out into the body. And this spine is the trunk, and then it spreads out in every direction from there. And so this is the tree that's in the midst of the garden, or it is at the Muladhara center. It is at the sexual center. And the serpent tempts Adam and Eve, Eve first, which is feeling. And then reason follows. Now we see that in our own lives. Sometimes we have this strong attraction for another person. And we feel so strongly about it that it overrides our reason, or it takes our reason with it. And sometimes we don't use our reason so well when we select a mate. We're just following that feeling. In the same way, when originally living in the Garden of Eden, we lived in this unity of consciousness. But this feeling force and this reason force were drawn down into the body and taken into the knowledge of good and evil, or duality. And because of that, this dual nature took over the consciousness, and this kingdom of the world took over our consciousness instead of the kingdom of heaven, or this unitary type consciousness that we started with. And it's represented in the sexual force because, one, that's a very powerful place for our life force to go to. The second is that when we come into the sexual energy of our body, we begin to look to the outside world for our complement, for our other half, to become unioned with, to become one with. And so this delusive force takes us over, and it makes us think that our union, our wholeness, will arrive by coming together with another person. But how many times do we think that we found that person, the right person in our life, only to have that eventually wear off to some extent, the rose-colored glasses fall off, and then we have to start into the hard work of developing a relationship that goes beyond just sexual or chemistry attraction. And so it's said that when Adam and Eve were thrown out of this Garden of Eden, they had to earn their living by the sweat of their brow. This means that we have to enter into the hard work. We're no longer in that union of consciousness. And so the more time that we spend out there, we grow an amnesia towards knowing that we had this union of consciousness right within our own being. And we come to believe that everything is outside of us, everything that will make us happy. And so we become wanderers, even like the Israelis, the chosen people. Those are the upward mobile forces within our own being and wandering through the desert looking for their home. And so when we too have this desire to gain our spiritual union with the infinite consciousness, something that we intuitively, on the subconscious level, we remember having that. We know that something is amiss, something is wrong with our lives, but we can't quite put our finger on it. We can't put a name to it. But we know there must be something greater for us, something more than what we've experienced up until this point. And so through this getting cast out from the Garden of Eden and into the world, these many journeys are described through the biblical passages. But when this Christ seed is born into the world, this is our return back into our own spiritual consciousness. So this Christ seed begins to flow up through the spine, and at each center, we go through different experiences. We will see different visions here at the third eye point, different colors. For instance, when the consciousness is raised to the second level, we will see there this deep blood red colored circle surrounded by this beautiful gold. This is the symbol for the second chakra. And there are specific tastes that come into our mouth. There's surprisingly very physical, many of these things that happen. We are made sometimes to sing and to dance, to move into different positions. You find out where these yogic positions have come from, because your body is made to twist into these different positions at different times. You're made to move in different ways. You find out where these whirling dervishes got their dances from. It's all a matter of the unfoldment of this serpent energy right within you. One time as I was being put through these experiences, my body was made to rock from the torso upward in circular motions. And from the waist up, I was just moving around and around. And suddenly my vision was transferred into the inner sight. And I saw there, coming up my spine, this hooded serpent that was moving in rhythm with this motion. Now that may sound disgusting or offending, especially if you have a fear of snakes at all. But it didn't feel that way as I had this vision. It felt mysterious and wonderful as I saw this serpent rising up with this circulating energy. And so that is the unfoldment. And through all these physical movements, it's a realignment of the physical body with your inner energy body or the astral body. Also with the inner causal body or the idea body. You see, everything has its origination in pure spirit, pure spiritual consciousness. And through creation, this spirit is projected out in what is in India called Prakriti, or it is the divine creative force that has gone out from the spiritual consciousness. And it all starts with an idea. And it's a projection of this idea. And then it is the vibration is changed from spirit to an idea. And then it is further solidified into energy, which is this astral body. And then it is further changed, this vibrational rate, into material creation, which is the densest and the most difficult in some ways. Energy that we have to deal with as this projection of God comes from spirit out into material creation. And so this material creation, this earth, these bodies, these are the densest forms of creation. And it is from here we've gone out to the furthest extent from the spiritual consciousness. And now it's time for us to return back into spiritual consciousness. And so it is through this way that we begin a realignment of this physical body with the astral body or the electrical emotional body, and then to the causal body, which is the idea body, which is extremely subtle, and then eventually all the way back into the spiritual self. So this journey is all being described within this chapter here. As these upward forces, the Jewish forces or the chosen people, this is inwardly symbolic of all these upward forces, all the desire nature that we have to reclaim our spiritual selfhood, our spiritual godhood. These are all these forces. And these outward forces of the Romans represent the law of the world. And so this physical law becomes resistive to it. Also, these outward forces through within the own chosen people, which is his own resistive. So from the very start, it's a battle. It's a war that goes on. And so there are times when we feel uplifted in consciousness and we feel tremendously free and wonderful within the spiritual consciousness. Then the next moment we can be thrown down into the depths of hell and we will just feel terrifically alone and abandoned. We won't feel spiritual at all. we'll have these temptations that rise up to try to take us away from spiritual consciousness. And so this battle ensues, and up we go, and then down we go, and then back up as we get tossed among the opposing forces. And so it's really something. And we have to learn how to cultivate steadfastness. This is one of the greatest attributes that we can have in our spiritual journey, is to be steadfast, that no matter what comes, we may remain true to our purpose. Now, most people live their lives in the world in a nearly unconscious state. They don't really take into account their lives. They don't really decide what they're doing with their lives. They just kind of drift from one thing to the next. And they find a job that they like all right, and they stay with that. They find somebody that they like okay, they stay with that person. They create a family, and so on and so forth. But it's rare to find the person who really becomes purposeful about their life, more intentional about what they're doing, what they're about, not just drifting from this place to that, without much thought or care about what they're doing. So living this spiritual consciousness requires that we become much more intentional, much more purposeful about our thoughts, about our words, about our actions. Because every thought that we hold, every word that we speak, and every action that we do sends out a vibrational force from it. And that force comes back to us. It is just as sure as the field of gravity that we exist in. For every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction. So Newton said in the second law of dynamics. And this is an exact description of the law of karma. Whatever we think, whatever we say, whatever we do goes out from us, and it returns to us in kind. So if we do good, we get good in return. If we act in disharmony with truth, then we get that equally as much. And so if our life is not as we liked it, it is not as we wished that it was, we have but one place to look in order to find this truth out, and that is the mirror. That's the mirror. We look right at ourselves because we have created this. Now, we may not remember all of this creation. It's gone on for much time. But it's true. It's true. And when you delve into this inner consciousness, sometimes you're lifted up and you're shown previous lifetimes. And it's an amazing thing, the connections between other times and this present lifetime. I've had such cases myself. I've not sought these things out. But when the time is right, some of these things are revealed to you because it will help you along on your own path. In my own case, I was sitting in meditation one time. I had been dealing with a bad back, and my fifth lumbar had been damaged. The tissue damage was there. And I had been having pain there and difficulty. But I'd also been experiencing a lot of fear, and I couldn't figure out where that fear was coming from, why it was so strong. And so in my meditation, I was shown this previous lifetime where I had been living at a time of night when there are knights and armor and so on. And I had been this knight, and I had been involved in a political upheaval that I was orchestrating. And through this political upheaval, I had been involved in physical fights. And in one of these physical fights, I was struck down with a sword right in my spine, right at this fifth lumbar center. And it corresponded exactly, and it paralyzed me from the waist down. I spent the rest of my life in shame, in humiliation, in fear, with this closely associated idea that if I try to make myself known, if I try to have this outward power, you see, this political upsurgence, then I will be struck down. And this is where the fear was coming from. And all of my life, I would just as soon recede and just be in the background, not put myself forward. Now, through my teacher, I was put forward, but it's not my nature. It's not what comes natural. Naturally, I feel myself to be more of a shy person. And these experiences I never talked of, but she said, speak from your own experience. Well, I had always held my experiences, those things of the Spirit, to be very close and very personal and part of my heart. But through that grace and her asking, then I was able to talk about these things. So through this lifetime that I had, where I had spent the rest of my life in this shame and this humiliation, this fear, this close association that if I put myself outward, I get struck down, then I had to overcome that. And somehow in seeing that lifetime, it helped me to release myself from some of those fears. Now, it didn't do it all in one fell swoop, but it happened as a gradual thing. And so as we need that information, it will come to us. But really, you are the culmination of everything that you have ever been. So there's no real use in seeking out a lot of that information. Most of us have our hands full just living our lives, doing what we do now. So this is the focus where we should be at, is on our lives now, and not delving too much into our background, into our history, but discovering and realizing our oneness with that infinite consciousness that resides right within us. And it always has. So this is the place where we should put our attention. And by putting our attention here on the third eye point, we put ourselves into this upward force. We withdraw the life force from the nerves and bring it up through the spine and awaken these higher centers. As this Christ seed comes up the spine, eventually it comes to the heart center here. And this is the place that if we were to stand up straight with our feet together and our arms outstretched, we would be in the form of the cross. This is the place where this upward vertical energy meets with the worldly horizontal energy. And this is the place where the crucifixion happens. It's also the place where it's the first transpersonal center. The bottom three chakras are all concerned with personal, with the person, with the individuality. But here we experience divine love, and that takes us beyond just our own personal concerns. We experience compassion here. And so this is the great place where this battle ensues. But that's actually part of the story later on. But this Christ seed comes out of the land of Egypt and starts wending its way up the circuit through the spine and putting us through all these variety of experiences. Now, in the same way that we don't have to know how our heart beats or how our stomach digests food in order for our heart to beat or our stomach to digest food, we don't need to know all the details of how this operates. What we need to do, even as with our own physical health for our heart and our stomach, we need to learn how to best accommodate our heart, how to best be in harmony with physical laws of nature so that we keep good health. In the same way, we need to learn spiritual laws, what helps us to develop spiritually and keep us on the path. And then all these things will happen of their own accord, whether we know of them or not. But it's wonderful to know these truths, because when you get in the middle of these experiences and you're made to move in certain ways, or you're made to see certain things, or you hear certain things, sometimes you might think you're crazy if you didn't know better. So it's very important to know the principles, and it's helpful to know all of these inner truths as we go about our business. These inner spiritual truths may be summed up in one thing that my teacher emphasized over and again, And that is to keep your mind on God. Now, what does this mean, keep your mind on God? That can mean so many different things to so many different people. People have been conditioned by the world around them to think of what God is. But God is that essential, creative consciousness that is both immanent and manifest in all creation, and yet is transcendent to it. It is the all and all. And it is infinite in its proportions. Now, when we think of that from a human standpoint, that we can only create some kind of an idea of what infinity is. We can't know it. But when we are lifted up in spiritual consciousness, we can begin to know what infinity is within us. This consciousness can expand beyond what it is to be this little human self, in the sense of this physical body, in the sense of the electrical, emotional body, even in the sense of the idea body. And it can break all three of those bonds, and it can rediscover its union. That's what yoga means, is union with this infinite consciousness. So to be a true yogi means to establish this union right within your own consciousness. And even as Jesus said, I and my Father are one. That is a yogi of the highest caliber who has realized their oneness with the omnipresent, omniscient, omnipotent power and consciousness that is within us and all around us. So this is the gospel, the good news. The kingdom of heaven is within you, and it is here, and it is now. And it is but for our spiritual unadventurousness that we could know this infinite consciousness. That you can know this infinite consciousness, that you can breathe in it and swim in it, be it. And you are no longer the observer separate from it, but you become one with it. You realize that it is spiritual consciousness that gives you life, gives you the power to think, to feel, to do, that you are an expression of divinity itself. And in truth, there is no separation. You are one and the same. And yet at this point, from a human standpoint, you can't say so because you are encapsulated in this bubble of consciousness, and yet you exist in this great sea of consciousness. So to be inspired, to seek out that consciousness in greater measure, to take the time to meditate, to become quiet, to remove the tension from the world. Now, this isn't easy in the beginning. Even if we close our eyes and become still within ourselves, our consciousness, this stream of thought, continues to play in front of us. All the demands of the world, all the habit patterns, everything continues to dominate the consciousness. But through imbuing our mind with God, by thinking of God, by chanting God's name, by meditating on God, by thinking of God's attributes of freedom, of bliss, of upliftment, then we can become more and more connected with that. And our identity slowly changes from humanness to divinity. And then we look upon all life as expressions of divinity. And we know our oneness with it. Absolutely. Not through speculation, not through philosophy, but because our experience tells us so. So this is the realization that is possible. It is our inheritance. It is immanent within us. And the only thing that separates us from that is our own decision-making power, and then going through the steps that are required to know it. And then we may become that. And it is not becoming something or someone different than who we are, but it is discovering who we truly are. And when you live in that, you feel as if at last you have finally come home. And you can be home wherever you're at in this entire world, because it's not dependent on outer circumstances, but it is in an inner freedom that you have attained and rediscovered in your journey from the human to the divine. So by always fixing our attention upon the good, on the beautiful, on the uplifting, by chanting God's name, by thinking of God, by meditating on God's ecstasy, you will become that. And in becoming that, you will become as a light on a hilltop. And all those who look for the light will see it burning brightly within you. And then you will become a beacon for those who are also trying to find their way. So this is the gospel. This is the good news. And it's too bad that these truths have been distorted and maimed and sometimes just outright disowned by those who are the keepers of the truth, by those who should have been invested in handing it down. But they became the modern-day Pharisees and Sadducees when Jesus said, "Neither do you enter in, nor do you allow those seeking to enter in to their own heavenly consciousness." They didn't do it. Not only that, but they became actively obstructing others from doing the same. So this is a great crime against humanity, but it doesn't change the truth. And the truth is that you are made up of God stuff, of divinity, of joy, and of love, and of intuitive wisdom, and that you have it in such great and vast degrees, you cannot believe it. And when you discover your union with it, and you just continue to unfold layer after layer, discovery after discovery of this infinite consciousness within you and everywhere about you. So this is the inner meaning of the birth of Christ within you. And we can celebrate that. We can celebrate it with all of our hearts and with all of our souls and with all of our might, that this Christ self, this divinity, this anointed one, might be born within us and make itself manifest in heavenly consciousness in our own lifetime, not waiting for death, not waiting for some other time, some other place. It doesn't exist. This is what exists. And that we might know it here and now. So let us pray for and observe and reach out for the birth of that Christ at one, that Krishna, that Buddha consciousness. They're all speaking the same truth. They use different language according to their times and days, different parables according to the nature of that society at that time. But the underlying truth is the same. And Mohammed taught the same truth, and on, Lao Tzu, so many others. So let us awaken to the great possibility that exists within us and know, because of the experience that resonates through every cell of my being, I am that I am. And know it without reservation, because we have seen it. we have experienced. I would just like to stop there and see, for those who are new this evening or those who have been practicing, if there's any questions about anything that I've said or anything about your own spiritual practice. Just remind you that if the question is in your mind, it's probably in somebody else's mind too.
Well, I went out Thursday night and I was listening to some loud music. Rhythm and blues. And I decided to walk home around midnight. And I had a gallon of milk with me, as it so happens, because I got it from somebody who has a cow. And I got a ride to the dance, and I was carrying it home, which was kind of funny. I was carrying a gallon of milk home and I felt like Krishna. So I walked home. The second night in a row, getting a little exercise, kind of nice to walk home, you know. I love walking home. I want to be home walking down the middle of the road, usually around midnight. It's kind of, I always take a flashlight with me now, because you can be invisible on the road without a flashlight very easily. Anyway, when I got home, I went to sleep. I laid down, and I had an experience of, I just suddenly felt this, I closed my eyes, and all of a sudden, well, my ears were ringing, right, from the music. And I just had this, and I've had it a couple times lately, this opening of some kind in my mind, where I just saw all of this multi-pointed star with lots of colors, right, in my head. And then it went into this five-pointed silver star, right?
Right.
It was not like, it was bright. It was really bright in there. And I just didn't know what to do at that point. I thought, well, maybe I should get up and meditate on this right now. I said, but maybe I'm not supposed to, though, because you're only supposed to do that exercise that you taught us briefly. So I just enjoyed it for a few seconds. I said, oh, well, that must be what it's supposed to look like.
Right.
Maybe someday when I practice, I'll be able to attain this vision. But in the meantime, I had this incredible vision.
Yeah.
It was pretty, you know, it was pretty fantastic. I mean, it just was a wonderful, you know what it looks like.
Yeah.
It's pretty bright.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful, for sure. So I thought I'd let you know about it.
Yeah, thank you. When that experience happens, the first time that I saw it also, I was lying down. I was working at nights at the time, and I was just waking up and just kind of talking to God and meditating and hanging out with God for a while before I got up. And suddenly this brilliant five-pointed star was just there. It was beautiful, and it stayed there for a while. But as that comes to you, then just surrender yourself, so to speak, to the star. Just place yourself there in front of it. And what will happen is you'll naturally be drawn in through that star. When that happens, you'll be taken into a realm of light that just wave after wave after wave of light expands out further and further. And your consciousness with it. And your consciousness will just expand into these vast proportions.
Should I get up?
You can get up, or you can stay laying down. Whatever.
I just didn't know what to do.
Whatever you feel in the moment. The main thing is to stay tuned into that.
Yeah.
And then allow yourself to be drawn through if that's what's to happen at that time.
Well, I fell asleep, unfortunately.
And that is the danger of staying laying down, is that you can go into what from a meditation standpoint is a negative state, which is a sleep state. Meditation is that union, but it's a conscious union. Now, when we go to sleep at night, our first 2 hours in sleep is in deep sleep. And this is going beyond all time and space and in an unconscious way, re-identifying with the infinite consciousness. And this is where we get rejuvenated from. The rest of sleep is spent dreaming then, with the rapid eye movements and all of that. And so that's the processing that goes on in the human brain. But it's not this absolute oneness that we feel in the unconscious state. Meditation is the conscious union. It is moving into that infinite consciousness, but in a conscious way. And so we get all the benefits of it, and we get to experience it in a conscious way. And it's wonderful. So when most often at nighttime like that, whether I'm woken up or it's happening when I'm going to sleep, it's a good time to sit up and just be with that for a while.
Yeah, it was the first.
These days when I lay down to sleep, there's such a bright light inside. For quite a while, I kept on thinking that I left the light on in the room. And I'd open my eyes to turn the light off and see that it was totally pitch black, and I closed my eyes. And just this brilliant light lighting up on the inside. And so it's a wonderful thing, and it's purifying. There are different ways of approaching God, and one is through light. And that is just to allow your consciousness to expand and to become identified with that light. The other is through the sound of Om and this sound. And when this sound comes in, this high-pitched sound through deep meditation, you just allow your consciousness to expand with that vibration. And either one of those means can take you all the way toward your infinite consciousness. But the main thing is, don't stay without desire. Don't get caught up into trying to make something happen. That the fact that you're having that experience means that you're making progress. That light and that sound quality, those will carry you. They'll do the work. And so what you need to do is just make yourself totally available, totally surrendered, totally empty towards that experience, and then it will take you up on the wings, and you don't have to do it. So stay without desire. Just become totally surrendered in that moment, and everything will be done for you. That's wonderful.
Thank you. The other thing is, like, I've been waking up a lot at 3, and it's just, like, because I like to lay in bed, I just don't feel like getting up.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just feeling like I've been waking up a lot these days at 3 o'clock.
Yeah. 3 a.m. is actually a good time to meditate.
Yeah, I just wake up all the time at 3 o'clock, and it's sort of bothering me.
God is calling.
Yeah, I guess so.
Just depends on how you frame it.
Well, then I dream a lot, or I don't dream, actually. I guess you could call it, well, I just have a lot of thoughts.
Uh-huh.
I just keep dreaming. I dream, but mm-hmm. I'm awake.
So what you might try is just going ahead, getting up, putting some warm clothes on so you're comfortable, and meditating, and until that desire nature for meditation ebbs out, then you can lay down and go back to sleep again. There's a purpose being fulfilled in that. So try in as much as you can to cooperate with that purpose. This divine life, when this divine consciousness and energy comes in and starts to guide you and take you up into higher consciousness, it's a terrific life. You know, sometimes people think of a religious life or a spiritual life is maybe be kind of boring or uneventful, or, and it's not that it's a circus, but it is exciting. It is terrific. There are tremendous powers that come into work, into being with that. And it's a wonderful life and fulfilling and full. And so it's not anything that we should be afraid of or shy away from. Jesus said, you will have life and have it more abundantly. And this is the truth. Mother, she taught much from, because her experiences and her realizations came from the Christian scriptures. But what she taught was absolutely universal. It's not relegated to Christianity or to Hinduism or to Taoism or to Islam. They're all speaking. They're all various parts of the one body. And so all should be honored. But Jesus was a great, great yogi. And whoever existed in that consciousness, whether they went through those, physically went through those experiences or not, there was truly a great spiritual consciousness that started that movement outward. So that should be respected also. But it's by no means saying that it is singular in its truth. Any other questions?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing how strong, you know, I just feel like spiritual teachers that have lived before us have a tremendous strength. Their spirit is so strong that they can guide us without even our having much awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Just through our whole lives.
Yeah.
Like I've gone through a lot. I was brought up Jewish, and then I practiced Buddhism and Hinduism, and I chanted a lot, which seemed to purify me. For about 20 years I chanted a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I always felt that ever since I read Autobiography of a Yogi when I was 12 years old, that I was guided by him.
Mm-hmm.
By Paramahansa Yogananda.
Yeah.
And finally I managed to find someone to yourself to initiate me into Kriya Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been a long journey, but it seems it just went by very quickly.
Yeah.
This was like a blink of an eye.
Seems that way now. It didn't always seem that way then, probably.
No, but it's 40 years, and it doesn't seem like it was very long.
Yeah. It's true, these great spiritual masters, even though they may not be in the body, continue to be a living presence. And if we focus in on them and attune our minds to them, to that vibration that they are, they can help us, protect us, to empower us. And we don't lose our identity. We don't become less of who we are. Rather, we become more of who we are. We become stronger in ourselves. This is the difference between a God-realized individual and somebody who's not. Jesus said, I am the door. And a God-realized individual can say that because they are in communion with God. And if you approach them, they are like a door that swings wide open. And you go straight into heavenly or spiritual consciousness. Someone who is not fully realized. As you approach them, you come to them, but they are like a door that's locked. And you just come to that doorway, and it doesn't lead anywhere except to that doorway, to the personality of that individual. And so it's true that as you focus your mind on these great masters, these are not idol worship, because you're not focused in on just the personality, but you're focused on God in that person. And so that doorway can swing open and you can feel yourself transported into spiritual realms. And it's a great blessing to do this. So it's another way of keeping your mind on God, is to keep that spiritual teacher always in the forefront of your mind. But always and forever, You have free will. That should never be impeded upon. And through that, you willingly and of free freedom surrender all that you call your own, and you surrender it into this inner temple. And that's what allows you to be lifted up and transformed and changed. Anything else? Close up. How will you please pray after me? O Heavenly Father.
O Heavenly Father.
Divine Mother.
Divine Mother.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
I feel the wonder and the beauty.
Of thy glorious presence.
Of thy glorious presence.
In every part of my being.
In every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for thee.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at thy feet.
And surrender myself to thee.
And surrender myself to thee.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
I feel the power of thy perfection.
Surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
Are radiant with thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
Of my communion with thee.
Of my communion with thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Interviews, if you'd like to set one up. The other is that Phyllis will be having a meditation in January. Do we have a date for that? You can let people know. Okay, let people know. And I'll be back the 1st of February. Everyone is welcome to continue the meditation. Thank you for coming. Namaste. I bow to the light in you. I'll say one other thing, that every New Year's Eve we have a meditation service, even if you can't be there physically. From 8 o'clock to midnight, and meditate to bring in the new year. It's a wonderful way to bring in the new year. And so wherever you're at, if you want to tune in your consciousness with that, most enjoy your company. If not in the physical, then in the spirit.
Is that here?
I'll be in Seattle. Reminds me of a funny event in Papa Ramdas's life that he was not able to go to a certain place and where they were inviting him to, and so said won't be there and won't be able to come physically, but will be there in spirit. So they sent back a telegram, said, "Have received spirit, much appreciated. Please send body." So they didn't give up easily.